prioritization is probably the most important skill that any IT person can have. So when you come in and you've got an inbox or, you know, a ticket queue full of issues, you need to be able to look at those and say, oh crap, this one I have to do immediately, but you know, these three can wait a little while.
You're listening to the AngleFreeIT.com podcast, IT career and culture advice without an angle. And now your host, the guy who is driven crazy on a daily basis from outsourced recruiters, Preston Kilburn.
So today I am with Jeff Bowden, and we're talking via Zoom. Jeff is currently the IT director for the Detroit office of Dassault Systems. They are the world leader in 3D simulation software. Jeff started with DS in 2001 after spending several years with web development shops in the internet boom of the late 90s. Prior to that, he was with EDS, where he began his career in 1991. So a little bit of background about Jeff. Jeff has an MBA from Michigan State University and a Bachelor of Science in MIS from Oakland University. In addition, he holds a number of certs and has been published in several industry journals. So Jeff, thanks for taking the time to meet with me today and just sort of chat about, you know, the IT industry in general and about, you know, how you move up in IT and just sharing your experience. So thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Preston, for having me.
So a little bit in your bio, right? We know who you are, but you know, in a minute or less, what's your origin story? Like, how did you decide you wanted to be in IT? What was that thing that made you go, yeah, I want to do this?
Well, from an IT perspective, I'm kind of a dinosaur. I mean, you did mention that I've been in this industry since 1991, and back then, IT was certainly not as prevalent of a career as it is today. And to be completely honest, it was just one of those things where I was at school, I was flipping through the course catalog, I saw this degree called MIS, and I said, you know what, that sounds pretty interesting. I like playing with computers anyway. Let's see where that takes me. And I jumped into it. I really enjoyed it. I happened to luck into a fantastic internship, and that kind of kickstarted my career.
Okay. And so give us a little bit of experience. I'm not going to call you a dinosaur because I'm not that much younger than you, but how, watching this industry grow, what are some of the things that career-wise that you have experienced shifted, that your experience is that things, what is the question I'm trying to ask? What are the things that you've seen change that you're actually sort of surprised that they have changed?
It's kind of funny because when you've been in IT for as long as I have, you start to see the cycles. And there are definite cycles that repeat themselves. Things like moving from mainframe to desktop to server to cloud. You know, there's this constant shift from hosting applications locally to hosting applications on a server to moving applications out to the cloud to bringing applications back to your phone to putting applications on your laptop. So, you know, everybody is trying to perfect that, you know, that one thing that's better than the last step. But at the end of the day, it's just this rotation. So IT keeps reinventing itself over and over, and we're definitely making progress. Things are a lot faster, a lot more efficient, a lot cheaper than they were in the past. But, you know, to be honest, the base technology, it just keeps rotating. So, you know, you get to the point where you're kind of seeing what's coming next. And right now we're at the step where everything is again moving away from the desktop and out to the cloud. I'm sure that'll reverse in the next 10 years again. It's as long as you can keep up with those changes, you're going to do fine.
Yeah, I think it's so funny. I can't remember who I was talking to, but I was talking to somebody, and they pointed out, maybe it was my father-in-law, because my father-in-law is maybe a little bit older than you, and he's a self-proclaimed, uh, self self-proclaimed NASA dinosaur. So he used to work with supercomputers. And he's like, you know, it's just so funny. We started out telling users, hey, guess what? You're too stupid to manage your own data, so we're going to keep track of it for you. And then we gave it to them. And then the cloud came along and we said, hey, guess what? You're too stupid to keep your own data.
Exactly, exactly. So it'll keep cycling.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I always try and ask folks, you know, some basic core, you know, questions, you know, so that everybody sort of lends their weight onto these bigger pillar issues, right? So one of the few things that I like to ask people is, if you were just entering the IT field today, right, in your market or in your vertical, where would you tell people to focus their skill building? Like, what do you see as the thing that they need to know now that will propel them for a good couple of years?
So I'm a big proponent of the basics. So things like command line, understand TCP/IP, understand basic networking, understand the basics of whatever operating system you're working with. And that's going to always be true. And that's true across the board. Aside from the basics, there are a few things that are really becoming more and more important. Scripting is becoming really critical to have, you know, whether it's PowerShell or whatever. As long as you know a little bit, and you don't have to be a coding expert by any stretch, but, you know, understand what scripting is, how it works, be able to write a simple script. So when you get to that point where somebody asks you to automate something, you know, you don't just look back with a blank look on your face. That's a big one. Another big one is remote access, remote troubleshooting, remote management. It's no longer true that you're sitting in an office and you're taking care of servers that are in the server room. I mean, it does happen in some instances, but more and more those servers are going to be in a data center. They're going to be in a remote office. They're going to be in the cloud. So you're going to be expected to be doing the majority of the work that you normally do, but without a physical server sitting in front of you. So, you know what those remote tools are, how they work, what the limitations are, and, you know, make sure that you're able to navigate wherever the physical server happens to be.
Totally. I used to work at an oil company in the networking department, and one of the guys had this, you know, this phrase that if you have to open the door, you're doing it wrong. And I, you know, at first I was like, but I like my, you know, shiny boxes with blinky lights. But, you know, over the years, he's totally right. You know, I don't mean to sound lazy, but man, it's just so much faster if you can, you know, connect to something, fix it instead of getting up, you know, plugging a keyboard and a mouse.
Exactly.
And stuff.
Especially with virtual machines. I mean, you shouldn't even care. Is it a box? Is it a VM? Doesn't matter. If there's a problem, log on, fix it, done.
Totally. Okay. So this is, okay, I always preface this question with, this is just your personal opinion. This may not, you know, be your company's opinion or even ultimately your opinion if you were interviewing somebody, because the dynamics of interviews are always different. But as a whole, how do you feel about college degrees? Because, you know, if you look on Reddit and you look on Dice and you look, man, we're all over the place as an industry. Yes, you need a degree. No, you don't need a degree. Some companies actively don't hire people with degrees. Like, that's a little strange to me. But how do you feel about that when you're interviewing somebody? Are they at an inherent advantage if they have a degree, if, you know, if they maybe lack a little bit of experience? Like what goes on in your brain when you look at resumes?
So yeah, fantastic question. And I know it's a hot point for a lot of people, because within the industry overall, you really don't need to have a degree to break in and be successful. So I'll put that out there. From my personal standpoint and a little bit from my company standpoint too, we do like to see a degree, a four-year degree for people who are coming in to be systems administration or higher type roles. And the reason for that is it's just simple statistics. People who have a degree, we can safely assume that these people know how to manage their time, know how to manage projects, know how to navigate complex bureaucracies, can work on a team, can finish long-term goals. So instead of trying to observe that from, you know, the 10 or 15 minutes in a face-to-face interview, somebody who's coming in who already has a four-year degree, we can be relatively certain that those basic skills are already met. Now, does that mean that you must have a degree? No. Right. And does it mean that if you have a degree, you'll definitely have these skills? No. It just means that from a statistical point of view, you're more likely to be the type of person that I want on my team if you have a degree. If somebody comes to me with a personal referral and says, hey, I've worked with this guy before, he's fantastic, and, you know, they've got no education, it doesn't matter. I'll bring them in, interview them, and if they fit, they fit. But when I'm working blind and I've just got a stack of resumes in front of me and I'm wheedling that down from, you know, the 50 resumes down to, you know, 5 or 10 people that I want to talk to, I definitely do use education as one of those tools.
Very cool. Very cool. So speaking from a director's perspective, right, because a lot of times you may ask, you know, a lot of us may ask our colleagues, right, and we look at this from the boots on the ground perspective, but from a director's perspective, what areas of our industry are no longer necessary and are dying and people should not focus on those?
Probably the biggest one is hardware. I think a lot of people take a look at IT and they're like, oh, fantastic. You know, I've built a machine for myself. I want to do that for a living. But I mean, to be honest, hardware is such a commodity these days that, it's virtually disposable. I mean, so if you've got a machine and something breaks down, is it under warranty? Then you call the manufacturer, they'll replace a part. Is it out of warranty? Then it's time to replace it. So IT is not the hardware centric job that it was when I started. I mean, when I started, it was important that I had a toolkit and I carried it with me everywhere because I would be, you know, fiddling around inside of a $5,000 server, because we have to keep that thing running for, you know, as long as we can before we replace it. But, you know, nowadays we'll replace that with, you know, $500 or $600 or $800 servers. And, you know, if one dies, we just swap it out.
Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest one. But, the second one that I'll mention that I think affects more people is, the days of sysadmins are on a decline. We no longer need to have dedicated systems administrators in every building. You know, if you've got a mid to large size enterprise where you've got, you know, maybe 25 plus servers, you don't have to have somebody sitting in front of those servers and babysitting them. So if you've got a, you know, maybe you're working for a corporation that has 6 or 7 offices spread around the country, you can get away with having 1 or 2 sysadmins in headquarters running the show. You know, maybe you'll have somebody at the remote site who can put their hands on the machine if they need a reboot or if they need some hardware updates. But aside from that, you know, the number of sysadmins, I think, is going to decline a little bit and become much more centralized. It'll never go away, but the needs, I think, are going to be a little more specialized, and, you know, hence the scripting that I talked about earlier. but also a higher concentration at a smaller number of locations. So you'll have, you know, instead of one at each remote site, you'll maybe take, you know, three or four and put them at headquarters and then be done with it.
Yeah. And that goes back to your, you know, remotely managing things, right? I mean, why have everybody dispersed when, you know, I think there's power in centralization, right? Because if you're having a problem, I work on a distributed team and we're really, really good about getting on Slack and, you know, communicating that way and using video. I think video is amazing for teams. Mm-hmm. But it takes a lot of hard work to maintain that, you know, that level of interaction when everybody's remote and traveling around. And I feel like it's a very special team that I'm a member of. But in the absence of that, you know, when you centralize everybody, there's just, you know, there's a camaraderie and the ability to bounce an idea off of somebody that maybe doesn't really usually happen when everybody is spread out everywhere. So yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with
you. Yeah.
Okay. So since we're talking about, you know, changes in IT, let's talk about a few things that, you know, you and I were chatting about earlier. These are sort of more of the hot button things, sort of like, IT, you know, degree stuff, but how do you feel about diversity in IT? Like what do you see changing there?
So diversity, and I'm going to approach it not from racial diversity, but from male versus female type of diversity.
Totally.
I mean, everybody knows IT is heavily male-centric, and it's due to a number of reasons, and I won't get into that. But I think a lot of people overlook the importance of balancing a team. And I think that having women on an IT team is more important than people realize. The dynamics that they bring, the way they approach problems, the way that they deal with people and interact with people, the women that I've worked with generally have a slightly different type of perception and type of work ethic that really lends balance to a male-dominated field like IT. And I know there's definitely sexism out there. People who make bad assumptions about female tech workers. There are, people who have been in the industry forever who just make broad assumptions. I mean, it's stuff that's hard to get away from. So it makes it tough for a woman to break into a technical field. But I think it's really important to try to encourage and try to make it more accessible. I'm the father of daughters. I've got three daughters, and I know that being a woman in a tech-heavy field is a really difficult thing. I would send a message to all the guys in the field that be aware that subtle sexism is rampant. It's a real thing, and a lot of people do it without even realizing it. So keep an eye out for that and try to encourage a more balanced team. And if somebody is interested in, you know, a woman is interested in technology, encourage her, get her involved at an early age. Get the girls on video games, you know, buy them Lego and, erector sets. Don't stereotype and don't discourage just based on what the industry looks like today, because I think we'll be a lot better off if we can balance it out a little more.
Totally. I appreciate those thoughts so much. You know, I am a father of two boys, so I don't dip into too many, you know, women, female centric things. But one of my best friends is also in IT, and they had a daughter. You know, we I'm late 30s, almost 40 here, and my kids are both approaching teenage years. So I have my kids young, and a lot of my peers are now just having daughters and, you know, babies and sons, right? But it's very interesting because, you know, a lot of my friends are having daughters. I don't know why that is, but a lot of them do. And it's just very interesting, you know, hearing that from their lens, like, well, I want to buy this engineering kit, but it's like, you know, every picture in this, look at this, everything's a little boy. Why can't my daughter have, you know, a Lego set that isn't like magic sparkle things? Like,
that's ridiculous. Yes. And you know what, that's part of the reason that they kind of shy away from technology, because even from a very early age, yeah, just like you said, the Lego sets, they've got pink ones for the girls and, you know, the really cool Ninja and Star Wars sets for the boys. But mix it up, you know, buy the boys sets for the girls, you know, don't make a distinction, get them out there and, you know, have them play some Grand Theft Auto and, you know, you know, maybe when they're a little older, obviously.
I don't know. I shouldn't get the Reddit kiss of death here by saying I don't like Grand Theft Auto. But I love the modularity of Grand Theft Auto and what people do with it. But the game itself, I'm like, really?
Yeah. But I mean, in all seriousness, you know, something like, simple iOS games that introduce girls to gaming and gets them a toehold, you know, things like Minecraft. I mean, that's fantastic stuff. Because it's, you know, it's that interaction with the computer that makes them wonder and it makes them ask some bigger questions, you know, oh, if I can do this here, you know, what else can I do? How can I build on this? And how can I create other things? And how can I create useful things? You know, that's definitely stuff to be encouraged.
Very cool. So the flip side of that is, and this is a question that I've crafted to be as least offensive as possible, but how do you deal, because you're a director and you have to oversee teams and people interacting and stuff like that, how do you deal with the general saltiness of our industry, right? Like, I just feel like IT people as a whole tend to be a little bit more upfront and abrasive and rude. And how do you do that? And what advice would you give to people to sort of make them aware of this before they enter into an IT career?
So, fantastic question. And this is a really common misconception, I think, that a lot of people who are interested in IT miss, is that IT is 100% customer service. The entire industry is nothing more than doing things for other people. It's not programming. It's not sitting in front of a computer all day long. It's not locking yourself in the server room. I mean, those things do happen. But when you walk into an IT position, you are walking into a customer service position. So I talk to a fair number of people who are interested in IT because they want to avoid that. They want to sit in front of a computer. They want to type and create and, you know, troubleshoot problems, which is part of it. But the part that they miss is that they're doing that to make other people's jobs easier. You're troubleshooting things because, you know, the sales guy out in Wichita is having a problem, or, you know, the CEO can't get his email to run, or, you know, whatever the case may be. You're enabling somebody else to do their job efficiently. So everything you do is to the benefit of somebody else. And if you miss that connection, you're not going to be successful. So you need to go in with your eyes open and you realize that you are dealing with customers and, you know, coworkers, call them whatever you will. But at the end of the day, your job is to make their job easier. So, you know, don't come into IT with the assumption that it's going to be you and the computer, because it's certainly not. You know, to address the first part of your question, the general saltiness, I think that it just goes along with that. you know, a number of people come into the field expecting very little human interaction, and when they're thrown into it, they don't quite know how to deal with it, or they just don't enjoy it, which, you know, that's where you get the crusty old computer guy that you you don't want to ask him a question because you know he's going to snap at you. It's tough because it can be really difficult to find that person who's got a passion for technology, but is also a really good people person. When you find those, grab onto them and stick them in front of a customer, because those people are hard to find. At the end of the day, you still need tech workers. You still need people who can answer questions and who can survive a help desk type role for a couple of years. Unfortunately, a lot of those people are not people. Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, they're not good with dealing one-on-one. And so that's where the attitude comes from. It's hard to get around that. As a manager, it's a struggle, because that can be one of the biggest dividers between the IT team and the rest of the business, is how do you solve the business's problems and keep the workers happy when you've got a bunch of people who don't want to deal with other people? So that's definitely a struggle, and it's I don't see an easy way out of that, except to make sure that as new employees are coming in, and anyone who is listening to this who's interested in an IT type role, just keep in mind you're going to be dealing with people a lot. Yeah. And you're going to be judged on how well you do it. So, just be aware of that coming in.
It's so funny, and I will fully admit I did not get this when I started in IT. And I've always been, type A outgoing, friendly personality, but my God, like, I was not ready for you forgot your password again. Like, oh my God. Yeah, I know. I don't want you to write it down. It's 8 characters. It's not that hard. Like, figure it out. And
exactly.
And that is so. Yes, you hit the nail right on the head, because we are in a service industry, and I will be honest with you. Like, from my perspective, that was one of the things that held me back for a long time. Was that, I was kind of rude to people. Like, really? Talking about this again? Really?
Yep.
So
everyone has their turn at that. You get the people who don't like technology or don't know how to deal with it, and they just push it back on you. They want you to deal with it. That's not really what your job is. You shouldn't be doing with it. So yeah, I mean, everyone will run into that. You can't avoid it. I mean, all you can do is paint that fake smile on your face and, do the best you can and get them moving on and out of your day. Be aware that this is definitely a service oriented role. At least for the first few years, everyone has to go through it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And one thing I want to point out, just from my perspective, is, on the blog, we've got a couple of pillars, and pillar number 5 is, basically keep your dreams and your goals, even if people mock you, because you are going to run into those people that signed up thinking that they're just going to be able to do whatever they want and not have to talk to people. And that does make them upset and frustrated, and the business term for it is actively disengaged. And that can be such a stumbling block for people, especially I try to be nice to people, right? Like, hey, I want to help you out. But there is a point at which you don't want to isolate people, but at the same time, you don't want to go down with the ship, right?
Sure.
So that's always, that's a balancing point. Okay. So I want to swing back to interview skills, because you have a lot of experience that you can give to the listeners. What are a couple of just really annoying things that candidates constantly do that baffles you, that people don't realize, like, hey, don't do this in an interview? Like, what would those be?
In an interview, I mean, there's a number of rules that everybody understands. I mean, shake hands, introduce yourself, maintain eye contact, speak clearly. You know, just the basic interview rules that everyone gives out. And when somebody comes to an interview late, or they're not dressed appropriately, or they can't make eye contact, or they mumble when they talk, they're talking to their feet instead of to a person. That's an instant no for me. I mean, I don't need somebody who is a talk show host. I don't need somebody who is gonna, you know, come waltzing in and entertain everyone in the room. But at a base level, if you're in an interview, the assumption is you're on your best behavior. And if your best behavior is staring at your feet and mumbling, then what am I going to do with you on your bad days? So, I mean, it's whatever you're interviewing for, and you ask, you know, five people, how should I prep for this? Every single one of them is going to tell you, dress nicely, introduce yourself, speak clearly, make eye contact, firm handshake. I mean, just the basics. If you can't meet the basics, then you're not going to get an offer.
Totally. And if people want a little bit expanded version of that, I have a completely free checklist that I have made from my I'm an Idiot School of Hard Knocks, been to a lot of interviews and didn't get a job. And I actually asked people, why didn't you hire me? And there's some things on there that I was like, oh, I was not aware that was a thing. Okay. Okay. So, you know, going more macro, you are a director level, and you're in a leadership position. What is a message that maybe you could communicate to, you know, IT folks in general, that you feel like people try and communicate this message, but maybe it doesn't get articulated very well? Like what are your struggles that you guys deal with that maybe we're not aware of?
Probably the biggest one is a lot of tech workers, especially earlier in their career, are too focused. And by that, I mean, they've got a task in front of them and their goal is to complete this task. And I fully admit that I was guilty of this as well. You know, you come in, you sit down at your desk, you've got a list of things that you do those things. But what I would recommend to everybody, no matter what your level is, take a big step back and take a look at, from a company perspective, what is your role? And by that, I mean, let's say you work for a manufacturing company, and the work that you're doing will determine whether this product launches on time or not. That type of task is a heck of a lot more important than, you know, the guy over in shipping and receiving forgot his password for the fourth time today.
And so the
point I'm trying to make is prioritization depends a lot on your macro view of the organization and what happens within it. So it's really important to understand from a process perspective, what am I doing today? What does this ticket mean? You know, maybe it's an annoying sales guy that always asks for stupid stuff, but maybe that annoying sales guy is on the verge of making a, you know, $100 million sale that's going to, you know, determine whether your company makes profit this quarter or not. So it's really important to take a step back away from the annoyance, away from the day-to-day grind, and try and put into perspective, okay, this task that I'm working on today, is this something that is critical to the success of the company? Is this something that I'm doing because I think it's cool? Is this something that I'm doing just to keep busy? You know, where's the difference, and how do you prioritize those tasks? But if you don't understand understand how your business works, if you don't understand where the pain points of your business are, if you don't understand what the market looks like, what the customers look like, what the sales process looks like, you really won't have a firm understanding of what you do and how it affects the business. And I think across the board, especially at for the first 5 years, this is an area that 99% of employees miss. They never, and to be fair, it's because they're never asked to. But I would say take the time, understand your company, understand the processes, understand the industry, understand the different teams within your company and how they interact with each other, because only then can you really comprehend what you're doing and how it affects the business. And then, you know, it's a little bit easier when, you know, some sales guy comes to you in a panic and maybe, you know, you can panic right along with him because, you know, if, you know, your success on this problem might be the difference between making a sale and not making a sale.
Yeah. Totally. And that's, you know, that's something being part, you know, personally, I'm part of a sales organization and I have been in a couple of roles. And it's so interesting when you go from being in a part of the company that generates money to, from part that is just like, well, we have to have you because we have to have computers or we have to have networking or whatever. How you gain that perspective and like, oh my God, salespeople, I love you, but I hate you because, you know, it's so easy to, you know, spit out these pithy things like, you know, your failure to plan is not my emergency, but you know what? You are so right. When this person is trying to close a 5-figure, 6-figure, 7-figure, 8-figure deal, you know, you stop and you help that person because, you know, whether or not you get a Christmas bonus or whether or not they have to eliminate headcount, that literally is something that you can help determine. And it's stupid little things like, hey, I'm a salesperson, or hey, I'm, you know, working on this bid and I'm an idiot and I dropped my iPad and I have to be at the customers in 30 minutes. Oh my God, help me.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, like you said, a lot of IT people just see the request. You know, I dropped my iPad. I need it. It's an emergency. Can you help me? I mean, everybody says that. Everything's an emergency. But to know the difference between, oh, this is a real emergency versus, you know, oh, they dropped their iPad. You know, they can wait a few days. That's the key thing to understanding your business. Then you can really understand whether you can safely put this person in the annoyance tab or you really have to focus on this right now.
Yeah. How do you think, people in your shop, how would you tell them to gather that information? Like if I was you and if I was on your team and I was in help desk, who would be the appropriate person to ask? Like, do I ask my manager? Do I ask the director? Do I just go talk to people in the business? Like, how do people go about that? Especially people who are, you know, a little bit shy, a little bit like, well, oh my God, if I talk to this person, I'm going to end up getting more work, which somewhat in IT, that exists.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's a risk. I'll answer by giving a non-answer, which is it depends. It depends on your organization. It depends on the size. It depends on the people. But I would say go to who you're the most comfortable talking to. And maybe even it's a manager outside of IT. Maybe you're buddies with the marketing manager, or, you know, you got hired because you know the CIO, or, you know, whatever the case is. Talk to them and find out, because let's be honest, people love to talk. And when you ask somebody, you know, who are the real important people in this company? And it might not be the CEO and the directors. It might be, oh, that admin assistant over there, she's the one that makes or breaks this company.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you get a request from that person, that, you know, that one goes to the top of the priority list, because, you know, that person only deals with really high profile people. And so you know, simple questions can lead to pretty in-depth discussions. And so, you know, just start it out, and it could just be general lunchroom talk. You know, who are the important people? You know, who this person asked me this question, you know, in the grand scheme of things, is this person really as important as they say they are? Or, you know, do they just like to, you know, blow things up a little bit? But yeah, just start talking to everybody. Talk to people outside of IT, most importantly. I mean, it's hard to understand the dynamics of a company if you just talk to the IT people. You know, get out there, get to know the other people, get to know other managers, and see what the perception is outside. Because I guarantee if you talk to a marketing person about IT versus an IT person about IT, you're going to get two completely different stories there.
Oh, totally. Totally. And I want to touch on something that you said. I was involved with a rollout at one of the companies that I worked with. And at the time I was doing voiceover IP stuff, and we started, you know, we were, you know, mapping our rollout and okay, we're going to convert from this phone system to this other phone system. And they started assigning us to secretaries and admin assistants. I'm like, what? And they're like, oh, absolutely 100%. We're going to have your bosses be on the phones answering questions. You are sitting with these ladies, or actually there was one gentleman. This is these ladies and this gentleman for at least 4 hours. And you are going to sit there, and every time they have a phone call, you're going to ask them things like, how was it? Do you have any And I said, yep. That doesn't make any sense. Why are we dedicating like 15 people? And they said, here's the thing. If the secretary hates the phone system, the secretary goes to whatever C-level or director they work for and says, this phone system sucks. I can't do my job. And if a secretary can't do their job, the C-level person can't do their job, because they do 90% of what the C-level person does. So,
yep.
So here's the deal, folks. For those of you listening to this, it doesn't matter how grumpy the secretary or admin assistant folks are. They are your best friends. They will tell you when stuff is going on. Make it okay for them to call you and, you know, kind of bitch and complain about something, because they're going to be honest with you, because they don't have time to be, you know, catty, number one. And number two, you want them to talk about how awesome you guys are, so that, you know, later on down the line, you know, like, oh, you know, I really like that Preston. He was really helpful when we rolled out the phone system. I really like that Preston. He replaced my monitor. He was so nice and showed me all the features. I didn't really care about it, but he was really nice. And he took the time to
Exactly. And you know what? That one is pretty universal. Anytime you come into a company, find out who the admin assistants are and make good friends with them, because, yeah, those are absolutely the people that can make your job miserable or make your job great. And that's pretty true with just about any company.
So I'm going to ask you a question that's going to be beneficial for everybody, but selfishly, I just want to know a little bit. You know, I'm moving up in my career, right? And one of the pillars that we have on the blog is pillar number 6, which is surround yourself by smarter people and make sure that you're not the smartest person in the room, because the moment that happens, you stop growing. So you're a director. How do you find mentorship being, you know, as a high performer? And like, what does that look like for you? Like, how do you find people to ask questions of, and how do you continue to grow once you've reached the level that you're at?
Well, I'm a little bit spoiled, because I happen to work for a highly technical company, and there are a ton of people here who are way smarter than I am. And I interact with people from around the globe. We've got offices in all over Europe, all over Asia, obviously all over the United States. You know, the people that I interact with just at my job are a really impressive group. So I'm kind of spoiled in that regard. But to answer in a more generic fashion, there's a ton of industry groups, and I can't recommend this highly enough. But wherever you happen to live, unless you're way out in the middle of nowhere, as long as you're within driving distance to a major metro area or a major city, you're going to find a user group for any technology. You name a major vendor, there will be a user group there. It'll be, you know, VMware or Microsoft or EMC or, you know, whatever big software package you use. User groups are really valuable ways to connect with people who do the same type of thing that you do, but in other industries. Networking is crucial, not just for you know, keeping an eye out for the next job to hop to, but also for finding out, hey, how did you guys implement this? You know, you're at a very similar size and type company where I'm at, and you're on a newer version. How did you handle it? Those discussions are invaluable, and just making those connections, it's a really easy way to have somebody who can be a professional peer and answer things that you just have no exposure to. And the same thing with things like IEEE or, you know, any other more professionally centric types of organizations. Join a few. Most of them are free. Some of them cost money for you know, some type of annual payment, but it's well worth it to make those connections, get to know the other people in your geographic area, get to know the people who have a real connection back to the company that maybe you're dealing with, and keep those connections live. You never know when they might be able to do something for you. You might be able to do something for them. At the end of the day, the IT world is surprisingly small. Yep. You end up running into people that you've met in real unexpected places, and you know, keep those connections alive, and keep doing favors for each other. It's you know, it's to everyone's benefit.
Totally. Okay, so I want to talk about just in your career progression, when have you been, you know, when have you been stuck and pivoted to something else? So pillar number three is, it's okay to pivot, and you'll probably be more beneficial if you do pivot into another, like, vertical. So have you ever been, you know, you're like me and you lived through the dot bomb days, so I'm sure this is almost universal if people are age and older. But
yes.
But where have you been stuck, and how did you get out of that position? Like, how did you get out of that situation that you were in?
Well, as you said, I definitely went through the thick of the dot bomb era. Worked for a couple of companies that failed, honestly, the important thing was, just like I was just talking about, is connections. When you're working for a company that you know is going down the tubes, it can be a little frantic to try and get something lined up, and, you know, not jump ship before you have something, and not take something that ends up being the first good thing that comes along, hopefully have the time to actually make a plan about, where do I want to go next, and what do I want to do, and will it be something that I enjoy, and will it be a good company, and all these questions that go through your mind when you're doing a new job search. And the thing that does make it easier is, do you know somebody that works there? Can you talk candidly to them about, is this a good place to work? Do you like working here? Would you accept an offer again from this company? You know, find a way to get a little bit of inside information about, maybe what the company looks like from the inside. But then aside from that, like you said, pivot. Don't be afraid of taking something that's outside of your wheelhouse. I can't even tell you how many things. The work that I've done, you know, in the past year is stuff that didn't exist when I started my job. And that's going to be true of everybody. I mean, most people that are doing something today, that something that they do today probably won't exist in 10 years, and they'll be doing something completely different. So keep changing, keep growing, and don't be afraid to do something just because you've never done it before. Most IT people are problem solvers by their very nature. So the faster you learn how to do that and the faster you learn how to adapt quickly and learn quickly, the better off you're going to be. Because if you get that surprise announcement, oh yeah, we're downsizing and, you're going to be, your last day is next week, that doesn't give you a lot of time to search for that perfect job. And so if you find something that looks good, but, oh, geez, I've never done Unix administration or I've never done, SMS type stuff, it doesn't matter. Jump into it anyway and figure it out as you go. That's how 90% of the people get the experience that they have. Nobody teaches you how to be a Mac administrator when you're in school. You figure it out when you need to.
Totally. And one thing that I see people struggle with a lot too is imposter syndrome, right? Like, well, I really I have a family member who I've helped through a few, he's in tech and I've helped him through a few career, shifts, a few pivots. And he's like, well, I don't know everything about that. I'm like, nobody knows everything about that.
Right.
The large virtualization company that I work for, like there may be somebody who knows something like 80% of one product, but like that person is amazing and only does that and doesn't deal with customers. And that's like all they do. Like nobody knows everything. So it's okay to say, I have a lot of experience with this product. I'm not maybe quote unquote an expert, but I'm pretty darn good at it. And then the other thing is, analysis paralysis, right? Like, man, I don't know. I'm interested. What is your philosophy on this? As a manager, would you rather have something done a little bit dirty, but it's done? Or would you rather have something 80%, but it looks amazing? Total question. I'm just curious.
So I do like to follow the 80% rule. Okay. If you can get something 80% so that it's functioning, and then you can move on and do another 80% job, and you can move on from that and do another 80% job, I would rather have you do 3 or 4 80% jobs than 100% job. Because let's be honest, our industry can move really quickly. And in the time that it might take you to get to 100%, those 3 or 4 other tasks that are lining up are just getting more and more and more critical. So it's always a matter of balance and prioritization. Prioritization is probably the most important skill that any IT person can have. So when you come in and you've got an inbox or, a ticket queue full of issues, you need to be able to look at those and say, oh crap, this one I have to do immediately, but these 3 can wait a little while. But when you have 3 or 4 of those oh crap tickets, you don't have time to make every one of them perfect. You need to be able to get them good enough to go to the next one and then go to the next one. And you can tell yourself, yeah, I'll go back later and do that extra 20%. But we all know there is no later. Totally. There's never a time when somebody's not knocking at your door and asking you to do something. My particular approach to that is do the 80%, move on, and do as many 80% as you can just to keep the company running, keep people happy. And, maybe it doesn't look perfect, but as long as it works and we can move on to the next task, that's good enough.
Very cool. Well, thank you so much for talking with us today. Before we go, is there anything that you'd like to plug or, make people aware of, any cool resources that you love?
No, I do appreciate the website you've built. I would, if people haven't taken a look at that, I'll just give you a plug. I think you've got a lot of really good info on there. I would encourage everyone to read through the pillars and ask questions if you don't understand. But just also one more reiteration of user group and professional organizations, network in your area, get to know the other people, get to know what they're doing, how they operate, and get your name out there.
Very cool. Yeah. And just one resource for a lot of user groups, if you're just like super, because if you go Google user group in your area, it might be a little overwhelming. Here's my strategy and here's what I do. I signed up for Meetup because I have found most people are migrating to Meetup. Meetup just joined with another company. So we'll see how awesome it continues to stay. I don't know. I haven't seen too many changes. I've still been pretty happy with it, but there is a Meetup for everything. BMUGs, Cisco user groups, you know, OWASP, CICD, like everything you could imagine. So go look at Meetup and find something near you and literally find your people, find a tribe. That is something that is a drum that I will continue to beat because, you know, I am a dude. Jeff is a dude. Even if you're a lady, like I might know you off the internet, but I'm not going to recommend you for a job just because I know you off the internet. I won't. Yep, I mean, yep. If I know you, I will recommend you. So that is why those groups are so important. So Jeff is so right. Look into meetups, look into user groups and, you know, just continue on. Thank you, Jeff, for your time. And, you know, I hope you guys are having a great week. And the website that Jeff was talking about, my website, if you have an interview coming up or you just want to brush up on your interview skills, the only thing we ask for is that you can, did you put your email in there? And we can let you know when we drop podcasts or have new resources. And I hope you have a great day and we will talk to you later.
Thanks, Preston.
So, I hope you've enjoyed this episode. I wanted to circle back around to something. You know, a lot of what I talk about is, hey, if you want to do something, just do it. Like, don't be afraid. Don't be freaked out. And so, I am excited to tell you something that I'm going to do. I have been debating this a lot. And you know, if you've been with me since the beginning, you know that my passion is really to help people, right? Like, I love my job, I love technology, and I will probably always continue doing that. But nothing really makes me quite as happy as helping people solve problems, specifically when they're like, God, I don't even know what to do with my tech career. So I wanted to basically make this announcement that if you're looking for a little bit of coaching or a little bit of LinkedIn advice, hit me up, man. Like I would love to help you. Now, I'm probably not as expensive as you might think. A lot of the LinkedIn people out there are super expensive. So here's what I want you to do. I don't want to turn people away just because of cost, right? So here's what I want you to do. I want you to go to my website and I want you to sign up. There's going to be a box on there that says About Us. And down on the bottom, there's a contact button. Or if you want to, click on the SpeakPipe thing on the right that says Leave a Voice Memo. Or find me on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/in/Preston Kilburn. And let's get together and let's talk. Because if you listen to my podcast, you know, I'm pretty damn good at LinkedIn. And I'm pretty good at the passive recruiting game, right? Because you kind of have to game recruiters a little bit. And as much as it's annoying, sometimes you need to go change some words out for some other words on your LinkedIn profile. And for a lot of people, they start doing it and it looks just completely overwhelming. So let me help you with that. So reach out to me if you are interested. I would love to help you. Another thing I wanted to sort of just announce and give you guys just a little peek behind the curtains. I am working on a promo deal with a company and I'm pretty excited. I can't reveal the name right now, but one thing that I promised you in episode 0 is I won't tell you about anything that I think is crappy. and I won't promo anything that I haven't used and that I haven't used for a long time. Yeah, relatively a long time. But so I have two tools that I'm really excited about. But honestly, I want to verify a few things first to make sure that nobody's getting ripped off, me, the company, or most importantly, you guys. So thanks for sticking around and listening to my outro. Again, if you're interested in a little LinkedIn or career coaching, specifically if you're a tech person and you're looking to improve your passive searchability, hit me up. I would love to help you with that. But if not, hey, keep listening. I've got so many guests in the pipe, and I am very excited to share them with you. I hope you have enjoyed listening, and I hope you have a great day, and I hope you're having a great week. Talk to you guys later.